this is Ted DiBiase, and you're listening to the B2 Journal. And remember, everybody's got a price for the million-dollar man.
I'm a big believer that if it doesn't work on a bear, you don't do it in the ring.
I wear the fanny pack like it's a thunderbolt from freaking Zeus.
Weapons are not only welcome, they're allowed.
You kick my dog, I'm gonna kick your cat.
This is your life.
Hey, Colt Cabana, how you doing? You're all like big, fat, failure turtles.
Good evening. Good evening. This is the V2 Wrestling Podcast with me, your host, Adam Davey, and I'm joined by Gavin Duenas, as always. Good evening, Gavin.
Good evening.
And tonight we've got a very special guest. We're joined by Tenacious Z himself, Zach Gowen. Good evening, Zach.
Good evening, gentlemen. Hello to all of my friends over there, over the pond and across the world. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate the interest.
No, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on, and we were really excited when you said that you'd come on and do the show, because obviously, you know, you haven't been seen on TV over here in a little while, but there's always a lot of interest, and I think it's an amazing story, and it's something that I've certainly been very excited to talk to you about. So where are you this evening? I believe you're in the States, but where in the States are you?
Yes, absolutely. I'm in my home. I'm in Detroit, Michigan. Over here in the States, it is, it's in the afternoon here, it's in the evening over there. I just put my son down for a nap. He is 14 months old, so hopefully he'll stay asleep. I won't talk too loudly as to not wake him up and to disturb the interview, but I'm enjoying a very relaxing Monday.
How's the mood in Detroit after the recent bankruptcy filing?
Well, yeah, we saw that coming. That's why we hired a financial emergency manager about a year ago, because it was going to end up in two ways. Either we were going to file for bankruptcy or we were going to get bailed out by the government. And quite honestly, I think this is the best way to go about rebuilding Detroit, man, and moving back to the great city that it once was. We're a tough group of people, and we bounce back quite easily, so I anticipate great results, and I'm optimistic about our city for sure.
Now, for the benefit of our listeners, we have got a lot of listeners who vary in ages. Gavin and ourselves are most probably over the hill when it comes to wrestling. We're in our 40s now. Well, I am. Gavin's just...
You are? I'm not in my 40s.
And, but for some of our younger viewers, they might not know about the story about yourself, Zach. So, to give them a bit of information, you, at the age of 8, you lost your left leg to cancer.
That's correct. Yeah, what makes my story unique, and I've been a professional wrestler for 12 years now, and what makes my story unique is the fact that I did lose my leg to cancer when I was 8 years old, but I did not let that stop me from pursuing my dream to become a professional wrestler. And, by the grace of God and the support of all the fans worldwide, I've been able to live out my dream for the past 12 years. And it's certainly something that I'm very grateful for and something that I'm very proud of.
Can I just ask about that? Because when I was 8, I didn't think about I wanted to become a wrestler. Don't get me wrong, I love wrestling. But was it something that it spurred you on because you lost your leg and you thought, that's what I want to do? Or was it something that you'd wanted to do before you'd lost your leg?
No, that's something that came on later in life. You see, when I was 8 years old, one of the best memories, one of the greatest memories I've ever had was 3 weeks removed from the surgery, 3 weeks removed from having my leg amputated, sitting in a hospital bed just pumped full of chemotherapy and radiation, my body ravaged with pain. I watched Ric Flair win the 1992 Royal Rumble. And for those 3 hours watching that program, watching that pay-per-view, I wasn't in any pain and I wasn't in any discomfort and I was comfortable in my own skin. And that, to me, that is the magic of professional wrestling. That's what professional wrestling is all about. That was the moment where I fell in love with the sport, and I believe it's the greatest sport in the world. But it wasn't until later on in my life, until I was a teenager, that I actually thought I could pursue it, that I actually realized that it could be a viable career option. So it wasn't until I was 16 and I saw guys like Rey Mysterio and some of the luchadors and Chris Jericho and some of the guys on a smaller scale do these crazy athletic acrobatic maneuvers that I thought to myself, man, I could do that. And once that seed was planted in my brain that I could do it, all I wanted to do was recapture the magic that I felt watching the 1992 Royal Rumble. And that's what I've been aiming to do for the past 12 years, is to spread that love and recapture that magic.
When you first told your family and friends that you wanted to be a wrestler, did they kind of, in a nice way, did they kind of try to say, well, hang on, Zach, you've only got one leg. You can't be a wrestler. You're never going to be a wrestler.
No, I think they humored me, thinking that it was just a phase and it would pass. The problem is that it never passed, and the love and the drive and the determination to succeed grew stronger over time.
And did you always have a prosthetic leg in your kind of day-to-day life?
I do, yep. I always had a prosthetic leg. I was fitted for one soon after the operation. And to me, it's a lot easier to walk around with one because it frees up my hands. It kind of makes me grateful that this all happened when I was 8 years old, because I was able to grow up and get used to the fact that I was missing a leg. And I could, you know, I think kids bounce back easier than adults do.
I'm sorry for interrupting. I was going to say, you always wrestled without your prosthetic leg, didn't you?
Very much so, yes, because I can maneuver and I can move much more easily without my leg on. I can move quicker, and I'm much more agile. And it kind of, when I wear my prosthetic when I'm in the ring, it kind of gets in the way a little bit. And so when I take my leg off, I feel very much more comfortable when I'm performing and wrestling.
Now, looking back at that early career, certainly the first time I saw you was in WWE in this country, because I think back then, I believe TNA wasn't on in the UK. So for me, growing up and seeing it the first time, I'll be honest with you, I had absolutely no idea that you had a prosthetic leg in those early days. And I don't know if Gav was the same, but what kind of reaction from your point of view did you get from the crowd when you broke into WWE?
The reaction was generally positive. What I think WWE saw was an opportunity to make some money, an opportunity to tell a very interesting story that people might, you know, gravitate towards or find some inspiration, and they exploited that. And not in a bad way, but the only issue that I had was that they signed me basically 8 months after I had my first match, and I was 19 years old. So I was just a kid. I wasn't ready physically or mentally to receive that gift that they were offering. I don't think that I had the proper capabilities to handle that responsibility. So that was the only issue. Like my talents and my skills were never in question. It was more of the maturity factor. But the reaction generally from the wrestlers and from WWE was very supportive and very positive.
WWE seemed to realize just what a marketing opportunity you were compared to TNA, where you'd wrestled a few times, but you were kind of just a sort of mid-card novelty in TNA, and then suddenly you moved to WWE and you were in this huge storyline with Vince McMahon, Hulk Hogan, and Roddy Piper. That must have been incredible, so young, to be involved with such massive names in the history of the industry.
Oh, it was incredibly overwhelming, because these guys aren't only wrestling icons, they're cultural icons. These are household names. And how TNA was using me, that's kind of how I saw myself. I didn't see the bigger picture. I was too green. As weird as it sounds, I didn't realize what kind of marketing ability that I had. I was just there to wrestle. See, I got into wrestling not for the fame and not for the money. I got into wrestling because I wanted to wrestle, and I loved wrestling. And so how TNA was using me at the time, they were just treating me like any other wrestler. They just happen to have one leg. Now, in the business of professional wrestling, the business is business. And WWE saw a great opportunity, like you said, and really exploited that, which, you know, me and my family are certainly grateful for. And I'm so happy I had that opportunity at the time. But it just kind of goes to show what the different thinking between the two companies, especially at the time, was.
Do you kind of regret that it happened to you so young? Because, I mean, you were just saying there that you felt that, you know, you're not, it was immature. I can't remember if that was the word that you used, but that's what you hinted at. Did you wish it kind of maybe happened 4 or 5 years later when you developed a bit more physically and mentally?
I did for a long time. But what I found out is being bitter or having regrets ultimately is destructive for me. And so I just have to really practice, you know, the principle of acceptance and kind of believe that everything that happens, happens for a reason. Do I think I could have had a stronger run later on in my career? Sure. But it serves no point to look at what ifs. I can only control what I can do now. And right now, at 30 years old, I really feel like I'm in the best shape of my life, and I'm entering the prime of my career. I was just talking to my wife last night. I was on the road for the past 4 days, and just strong performances all around, you know, and these great wrestling shows. And I was talking to my wife, and I said to her, you know, I really think I'm the best I've ever been. And, you know, and that's such a cool, it's a cool feeling, but it's the opposite of what happens in my career. Like, because now I'm the best I've ever been, but I have very limited exposure to the wrestling fans. When I wasn't very good, that's when I had all the exposure. So it's kind of funny in a tragic sort of way. You know, but all I could do is kind of accept it and smile and do the best I could do. And quite frankly, I've never been happier in terms of, you know, personal and professional life. So it's quite amazing for me.
We're going to come back in a minute to some of the earlier people that you worked with. But I just wanted to touch on that, you know, you feeling that you're the best that you've ever been. We talked to Tim Arson, who played the ECW zombie. I don't know if you remember that one-off character. We talked to him a couple of months back, and he still held aspirations of making it back into either Ring of Honor or WWE or TNA. Do you still have those ambitions as well?
No. What I think happens is basically I am super content. For the first time in my life, mind you, I'm content on what I'm doing. Basically, I get to be my own boss. I get to take my own bookings, and I wrestle for who I want to. I wrestle who I want to, and I wrestle how I want to. And to me, there's such personal freedom, and with that freedom comes happiness.
Mm-hmm.
I've had. To me, money and fame don't equal happiness. And my goal in life, how I see it, is to be happy, relatively happy and useful, you know, to my brothers and my sisters. And I was. It's funny. I was just talking to Gregory Iron. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with who he is, but he's a wrestler who saw me in WWE as a fan, and I inspired him to become a professional wrestler because he has cerebral palsy. And he didn't think he could be a wrestler until he saw me on WWE. Now, because of that backstory, we formed a tag team, and he happens to be a very talented wrestler. A few weeks ago, we had a really great match in front of about 200 or 300 people, and we had about an 8-hour drive in front of us to go home through the night. And so, as we're driving through the night, he asked me. He goes, Zach. You know, what was it like wrestling Vince McMahon? And what was it like wrestling The Big Show and Brock Lesnar and all those people? And I looked at Greg and I said, Greg, I'm more proud of the match that we just had in front of 200, 300 people than I am of that match I had with Vince. And he was shocked. And I went on to explain that the match that we had in front of 200, 300 people, that was our idea. That was our vision. That was our thoughts. That was everything that we created. And the stuff I did in WWE, I was just basically a soldier taking orders. Mm-hmm. And while I'm very proud of the work, and I'm very proud of the fact that I was in WWE and I did some amazing things that, you know, a lot of people can't say, I was just an actor playing a role. But for me, the happiness comes with the freedom of being where I'm at and doing what I do, how I want to do it, when I want to do it. Certainly, I don't get paid WWE money, but like I said, to me, money doesn't equal happiness. I'm just happy to be able to be my own boss, travel the roads I like to travel, and you know, it feels pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You must be. Are you working quite a lot on the indie scene still? Because I would have thought it would be quite a draw for people to come and see you live. Because there's something pretty hypnotic about watching a guy wrestling with one leg. It is actually kind of amazing to watch.
Thank you very much. The kind words are definitely appreciated. It is. I've never been busier in all my years of wrestling than I am this year. And I attribute that. I attribute a lot of that to, you know, the hard work that I put in, as well as the word of mouth that I get, because that's the only advertising I get. See, I take great pride in myself as a live performer. I bring something to the table that nobody else in the world can bring. And what happens is I come to these shows and I perform in front of these fans, and what these fans do, they go home and they tell their friends, they say, hey, look, man, I just saw a wrestling show and a guy with one leg was on there and he was incredible. And then they come back next month and they bring their friends and family. And it's just kind of, it's kind of an organic, grassroots campaign. And that's really, I think that's the best way that these promoters can use me. Because I got a lot of work when I got fired from WWE based off the exposure I had in WWE, which is understandable. But the fact that I haven't been on TV in over 10 years, and I'm the busiest that I've ever been now, I really attribute that to the work that goes into, you know, my act. And to the wonderful fans that keep coming out and keep supporting, because without these fans, I don't exist as a performer. You know, it's really a beautiful thing.
I agree. You know, that it's amazing that, you know, 10 years on, people, you know, since you mentioned Zach Gowen, you know, on our site, or you mentioned that we were interviewing you, everyone knew who you were. But you know, you mentioned someone even more recent, say for example, Heidenreich, and people can't remember him. And nothing against Heidenreich, yeah, if you know him, by the way. Apologies to...
No, he's a very, very nice guy.
Apologies to him if he's listening to this. We'd love to get you on as well. But the point I'm making is that everyone does remember you for the incredible storyline that you're in, and also the great athleticism that you show and you still show.
Right, and I was only featured on TV for 6 months. Now that... I was on TV for spring, summer, and fall of 2003. Mm. That was my only exposure, and that was in 2003. And here we are in 2013, and my schedule literally has never been so full. And I can't tell you what a great feeling that is, because that's how I see myself. I see myself as like kind of like an underground cult character. That people come out to see word of mouth based on my live performances. I take so much pride in my live performance, much more pride than I do in my televised performances. You know, and I gotta tell you, man, it's like I said before, it's a beautiful thing.
So can I ask what promotions it is that you're currently working for? Do they tend to be one-offs?
See, how much time do we have? I work for a number of promotions. I just did this great, there's a great promotion here in the States. It's called, I believe, Traditional Championship Wrestling. and they're probably going to offer the most exposure for me as far as television goes. And the production values and the talent they use on these shows, it's amazing. It's better than anything that you'll see on TV. I work for a group called Prime Wrestling. They also have television. They're a great group of young, hungry guys, incredibly talented. And I work a lot all over the States. I mostly work in the States as it is. For a number of promotions, and like I said, they bring me in, and we'll do a 3 or 4 show angle to get the town buzzing about me, and then I kind of move on, kind of like the old territory days, how Andre the Giant would come in for 4 to 5, 6 months in a territory and just kind of move on and travel all around. That's kind of how I'm used these days, which I think is the best way for me. But I'm all over the place, and if you'd like to find out more information, please find me on Facebook or follow me on Twitter. I talk about, all the work I do on social media, so I'm really easy to find.
We'll put your Twitter account on the bottom of the article so people can find you easily.
Thank you. That's very nice.
Gavin,
In a way, I guess you sort of you reached the point in the industry that most wrestlers never reach at such a young age, but it's allowed you to just enjoy the rest of your career where you haven't got that pressure of trying to force yourself to get to the top of WWE. You can just enjoy being a wrestler now.
Amen. That's exactly where I'm at. That's exactly where I love doing these shows. I love wrestling more than ever. And for the past 10 years, I couldn't say that. It wouldn't be true because I was in WWE, and that was absolutely amazing. But then I got fired from WWE, and I became very bitter and angry. And I spent a good 5, 6, 7, 8 years, trying to be miserable because I wasn't happy with where I was, doing these indies, because I wanted to be back in WWE, or I wanted to be in TNA, or I wanted to, get back to Japan or whatever it is. I could never find any peace or serenity or happiness being where I was. And now with the age, with the maturity, with the friendships I've developed, I'm so completely happy being where I am and wrestling for who I wrestle for. Because there is no pressure. If WWE calls me tomorrow and offers me a deal, then we'll talk. If TNA does that, we'll do the same thing. But if it's not anything that I aspire to or that I can control, then I'm not too worried about it. I'm just really happy where I am right now.
Have either of those big two ever approached you in the last 10 years since?
I've had talks with WWE, and they've increased over the past 3 years. But the thing, and TNA as well, the thing about me is that I have to be presented in a very specific manner for my story to really work, and I have to be extremely comfortable with what I commit to.
You'd think that it would be a natural fit at the moment with the Be a Star anti-bullying thing. You'd think that you would fit in very well with that.
And also, if I can just add something to that question, it's been so long since you were last in WWE, it's kind of a story they could tell all over again because a large chunk of their audience wouldn't have seen it before.
Exactly, and that's something that I'm experiencing on these indie shows because you have kids there, 9, 10, 12 years old that weren't even born or they were babies when I was on TV. So they haven't been exposed to my story. And these are the kids that I'm connecting to. And when I do my speaking engagements, when I go school to school and I tell my story, these are the kids I'm talking to. And they really gravitate towards my story and they really connect with me. And that's what I'm finding out is really my market is these kids. These kids that maybe feel bullied or disenfranchised, or these kids that come from bad situations that don't think they can win. But they see my story, they see me wrestle, or they hear me speak, and they have a little bit of inspiration just for that day, at the minimum. You know, and to me, that's so spiritually fulfilling. It's incredible. But there's an opportunity in WWE to do what I do, except on a bigger level and touch more people, then I'm all ears for that. And they really do have a very strong campaign going, and they're doing some great things in the community. Definitely hats off to WWE for doing that.
How were you received in especially in the TNA and WWE locker rooms as a rookie? How did the other wrestlers receive you? Were they reluctant to sell for you? And you speak about the immaturity you had at the time, which is understandable because you were 19. Were you kind of a victim of wrestlers' court or hazing or anything along those lines?
Sort of along those lines. Yeah, I came in. In wrestling, there's about 6,000 unwritten rules that you should know by the time you get to WWE. And most wrestlers do know by the time they get to WWE. I didn't know these rules at the time. I was basically I was a kid in a candy store, and I certainly acted like it. But I guess that's not the best way to conduct yourself when you're a WWE superstar. So I definitely rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. I don't blame anybody. I'm not mad at anybody, because if somebody came in the locker room acting how I acted, I probably wouldn't like them either. But the thing is, it's really just kind of what happened. And, you know, there's no use crying over spilled milk. To answer the question, there's definitely some feathers ruffled for sure.
And when you had a match with Vince McMahon on pay-per-view, I think.
Yeah.
Were there wrestlers in the locker room kind of asking you to give him some extra stiff shots or anything like that?
No, that's a good question. No wrestlers asked me to give him some stiff shots. Vince himself, during the match, asked me to give him some stiff shots. Basically, I was just giving him some wrestling punches, and he looked at me and he yelled at me in the middle of the match. He goes, "Zach." I don't know if you can swear or not, but he goes, "Fucking hit me for real," right? And then I got scared because I didn't want to punch Vince in the head, but I realized that he's not a wrestler, and he can't really sell or register what I'm doing if I'm not connecting with them. So I took that as a very cool opportunity. I got carte blanche, basically, to punch Vince McMahon as hard as I could in the face, and I did that repeatedly. So to me, that felt really good. But that came from Vince himself. That's what he wanted, because that's what was best for business.
That must have been crazy, wasn't it? With the most powerful in the industry, and you're 19, 20 years old, and he's telling you to punch him as hard as you can.
I tell you what, man, it was surreal, and Vince is a maniac, and I love him to death, and I'll love him for as long as I live, and he saved my life, but he's a maniac.
So just to finish up on this interview, you know, we'll just cover what you've been doing, you know, talking to schools in a second, but I read that you're growing up, you were a fan of Sting, Hogan, and people like that. Is there anyone that you would still, even now, like to share a ring with that you haven't managed yet?
I was just talking about this with Jimmy Jacobs and Truth Martini, and we were talking about all of the guys that we've met, and we've met all of us, between the three of us, have met every hero, every wrestler there is on the planet, except The Rock. I've never met The Rock, and my buddies haven't met The Rock either. I'd love to meet The Rock. I'd love to share a locker room with The Rock, because that means it'll be a pretty big production. But there's one wrestler that I've never wrestled, and I grew up watching, and he was, you know, my hero for a long time, and that's Sabu. Which is kind of strange, because we've traveled together, we've been on probably 400 of the same shows together, but nobody's ever put us together, and I'd love to wrestle Sabu. He was my inspiration to become a wrestler. I wanted to be the one-legged Sabu, basically. So he would be a lot of fun to wrestle. That's pretty much the only guy that I haven't wrestled that I would like to wrestle.
Why do you think nobody's ever put you up against each other? Because I would have thought that would be quite a fascinating match to watch.
I think from a marketing standpoint too, I think it would be a good match for any promoter to put on a poster. You know, the homicidal Sabu against the one-legged Zach Howe, and I think just in the styles clash alone, I think people would be interested in the match. But I love Sabu, the best man, and he's certainly an anomaly, and he's an amazing athlete for sure.
I've got to say, if you'd give me 100 wrestlers that I could name who you were going to name, I think Sabu would have been 101. I don't think that would have been one of the ones I'd have picked out somehow. I don't know, but that's fascinating. Anyway,
that's
so
funny.
We'll finish up in a second, but obviously you're still doing your, you know, your Dare to Dream stuff and the public speaking. I take it you still do a lot of that?
Yeah, that's where my future is. I don't see my future as an active professional wrestler. I see my future in public speaking. Because of just the generally great response and connection that I get with these kids. During the school year, during the week, I go from school to school and I talk to kids and I share my story with them. And to me, it's so spiritually fulfilling to be able to give some of these kids some hope. And you know, let's be honest, wrestling is a very niche market. But with speaking and getting a book out some, you know, motivational DVDs, I can hit a different market. I can hit a much broader, wider market and ultimately positively affect more lives. Kind of like what Dallas is doing, Dallas Page, with his yoga.
DDP.
DDP, and he's talking to, he's on Good Morning America, and he's in USA Today, and he's spreading, you know, the word about health and nutrition, and he's affecting more people now than he ever did wrestling. And I see that as kind of an inspiration, and that's kind of like the direction I'd like to follow.
It's really great to hear that you want to do something so positive in the world, and I completely applaud you for that.
Well, that's why I think I'm here. I think I'm here to help other people, and I think that's why we're all here. Because, I mean, let's face it, we're all going to die, you know? We have a very limited, finite time on this planet, so why go through it being selfish and miserable and cut other people down and step on people's heads? You know, why not help each other and build each other up for the greater good? And that's kind of how I see my role in the grand scheme of things.
Well, all it leaves me to do, Zach, is to thank you for your time, and that's a wonderful message to go out on. And it's been an absolute pleasure and a real insight and fascinating, I dare say. So thank you for your time tonight. I think Gavin will
Hey, absolutely. Thank you for the interest. I hope I've never wrestled in England before. I would love to jump over the pond and do a tour over there. You guys have some amazing wrestling and some of the greatest fans in the world, and I'd like to be a part of that. So thank you for allowing me to share my story with the great fans over there, and thank you for this opportunity.
No,
thank you, Zach.
And just as on that note, funny enough, Sabu is over here at the moment, so you never know, you may get your match.
Yeah, we have to do Sabu versus Zach Allen in England. We have to.
Wembley Stadium.
I love it.
Well, on that note, we'll leave you to get back to your son, who, well, you've got the toughest fight of the lot, a two-year-old coming up. If he's 18 months at the moment, that's going to be even tougher than anything you face in the ring. A terrible two-son.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much. I have to get back to my PlayStation 3 at the moment right now while he's still napping. But I definitely appreciate you guys. Thank you for the interest again.
Okay, that's great. Well, thanks again, Zach. And that's it from V2 for this evening. Thanks for joining us. And if you enjoyed this interview, make sure you share it with others. But for the time being, good night.